Hello, and welcome to Prickly, a podcast from KJZZ's Politics Desk. I'm Ben Giles.
And I'm Cameron Sanchez.
And I'm Wayne Chutsky.
In this episode, we're going to talk about Congressional District 1, which covers parts of North Phoenix, Paradise Valley, and Scottsdale. CD1 has been all over the news lately. Wayne, what makes this congressional district so special?
Well, to start out, it's one of only two congressional districts in Arizona that's truly competitive. That basically means that the voter registration balances are pretty even. It slightly favors Republicans, but not by so much that a Democrat couldn't win. And so we see really close races every single year in this district. Additionally, the current representative, David Schweikert, who has fended off a lot of Democratic challenges in recent elections, announced he is running for governor. So looks like it might be the Democrats' best chance yet to flip that district. So we're going to get into looking at who's running, how they might Democrats might look to flip the district, and additionally, some trickle-down effects that this might have on other races if people who hold other offices in other competitive districts decide to jump into the race.
And Cameron, this isn't just a district that Arizona Democrats are eyeing as a possible pickup opportunity. This district could be important to national Democrats, the Democratic Party, as it tries to retake control of the U.S. House.
It definitely has national focus because currently Republicans in the House only have that majority by a few seats, and this is a truly competitive district. It's one of two districts in Arizona, CD1 and CD6, which are rated as toss-ups by the Cook Political Report. So it's a place where Democrats have historically put in a lot of resources and I think had assumed that Schweikert would be the incumbent once again, but now are feeling maybe some more hope given that he's out of the race.
And with Schweikert leaving the race, there's obviously going to be lots of talk about who will replace him, who from the Republican Party will step up to be the GOP nominee in this, you know, truly competitive district. But we actually haven't seen that many Republicans jump into the race yet. Wayne, do you have a sense of why people aren't like climbing over each other trying to get into this district?
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, we've only seen four, they're called statements of interest. That's really like people who are saying, I think I might run. It's not an official announcement, but it's the first step. So as of taping, we've only seen four Republicans fill those out, and we're not really seeing any of those big names. Now, we've heard a lot of big names that could potentially run, and we'll get into that in a minute. But yeah, it's just kind of, it seems like everyone's kind of biding their time, and there's a few different theories as to why. On the other side, Democrats, there's been a slew of Democrats jumping into the race. I think we have 12 so far who have filed those statements. But again, outside of a few names, it's a lot of people we haven't heard of, which if you cover politics and you're in this every time, every election cycle, that's not super rare. Kind of someone might get an idea that I want to run for Congress and file this and then never end up running. And then every once in a while you get someone, you know, a lot of times a moneyed business executive or something like that who has the money to fund their own campaign, doesn't need that institutional backing, who might jump in. But yeah, like you said, we haven't really seen those too many of those big names jump in just yet.
And Cameron, like Wayne said, this is kind of a rare, unique situation in that we haven't seen a bunch of Republicans officially throw their hat in. What have you heard in that district?
I've heard surprise because typically typically it happens a lot sooner than this, where people who are somewhat prominent or well-known jump into the race as soon as they see the opportunity. And of course, this is a high-level, high-profile seat. It's Congress. And I think even Schweikert said he was surprised that he hasn't seen more candidates jump in yet. He said he and his wife are betting on it. They have an over-under at 9 candidates.
I'm completely surprised the fact that almost no Republican has stepped in yet.
Well, as you both mentioned, there haven't been a lot of official announcements of I'm so-and-so Republican, I'm going to run in CD1. But we are hearing a lot of chatter, a lot of big names that could enter the race. Cameron, who are some of the GOP candidates that might throw their hat in the ring in CD1?
There's a solid handful of lawmakers and former lawmakers who I've heard might run and reached out to and said that they might run. That includes Representative Matt Gress, who lives in the Phoenix area, which is in this district. And he has been there for a while now. And he said that he's considering it. He's pretty well established. Definitely a lot of folks in the political world think that he's going to run. And that includes Justin Wilmoth, who is a fellow representative of Matt Gress. Wilmoth has been a representative for about the same time as Gress has. He's, I'd say, not as high profile. Gress was in the Ducey administration and Wilmoth was not, but he's interested in running. There's also Joseph Chaplick, and he's a member of the legislature's far-right freedom caucus. And he has also told me that he is interested in running for Congress potentially. So they're considering it. They haven't announced anything. There's also former lawmaker Michelle Ugenti-Reda. She was in the House and the Senate at one point. She is a Scottsdale lawmaker, or was a Scottsdale lawmaker, and has been working as a lobbyist. She said she's interested as well. And, of course, one of the most high-profile names that we've heard so far is Gina Swoboda, and she is the chair of the Arizona Republican Party. So she's definitely very well known. She has some opponents, but also a lot of fans in throughout the party, including President Trump endorsed her to run for chair, actually. So she has said that she's considering it. There's a lot of chatter about that and some pushback from some folks in the Turning Point wing of the party already, even though she hasn't announced officially.
Okay, so we have some state lawmakers. We have, you know, a pretty prominent Republican in Arizona. The chair of the state Republican Party is considered a candidate to jump in. Who are some of the wild cards or some of the lesser knowns that are mulling a bid in CD1?
Some of the wild card names that I've heard include Carrie Lake, who had run for Senate in Arizona and also had run for governor. She was not successful. She's currently working in the Trump administration, but there's a chance, of course, of her coming back at any point. She could do that. She hasn't said that she's considering it officially. I've also heard the name Mark Brnovich. That's our former Arizona Attorney General. He was the Attorney General during the Ducey administration, and he has not been active in Arizona politics recently. He had been tapped to be an ambassador to Serbia, but is not going to be. And so there's a shot of him coming back at any point, of course. He's also not said anything official. In sort of the celebrity realm of things, Danica Patrick is a name that we've heard. She is a former NASCAR race driver. And Todd Graham, who is a former ASU football coach, and I believe still a football coach, but no longer at ASU.
He's in Texas right
yes.
now.
Yes. And Sean Noble, who is a longtime political operative. He might not be known to folks, you know, as a lawmaker or a celebrity, but for people involved in politics, you've definitely known the name before. And I think there's been sort of a fair indication that he's considering it.
Okay. Lots of potential candidates. Let's shift gears to the other side of the aisle, Wayne. We already knew some of the candidates who were, you know, running to attempt to unseat Schweikert. Has anyone else jumped in on the Democratic side of things now that Schweikert has removed himself from the equation?
We haven't seen anyone notable jump into the race since Schweikert got out, but the two big names that were already planning to vie for the chance to take on Schweikert were Democrats Amish Shah and Marlene Galan Woods. Shah is a former state lawmaker, and he actually won the nomination last cycle, ended up losing to Schweikert by about one percentage point. Galan Woods also sought that nomination last time. She is the widow of Grant Woods, the former state attorney general, former Republican turned Democrat, close ally of our current attorney general, Chris Mays. So she's got a lot of political backing as well. So they're both kind of jumping in the race to say, hey, I'm the right one to take on whoever this Republican is now, previously Schweikert. As I mentioned before, there's also a lot of names we haven't heard of. There's, you know, 10 other Democrats who have filed papers. Right now, the only one making a lot of noise is a small business owner by the name of Jonathan Treble. He has spent a lot of money into his own campaign already. And when you don't have name recognition, that's typically the sign that you're going to be a serious candidate, is that you have the money on your own to spend. And thus far, he's giving in pretty large numbers. But no one else yet, but I would imagine with the Schweikert opening, that on the Democratic side, you might see some other interested parties jump in soon.
More to come, potentially. More to come. Okay, so Cameron, I keep hammering this point, but it just really is, I think, surprising, and I think a good indication of how unique the situation in CD1 is, why we haven't seen more action. I remember when former Congressman Debbie Lesko announced 2 years ago that she was not going to run for re-election in CD8. It seemed like that race filled up with candidates, not just within days, but I think within hours, if I recall.
Definitely. I think the reason might just be that CD1 is such a competitive district, and it's not just competitive in the primary, but it's also going to be competitive in the general. So whoever runs, whoever jumps in for the Republicans is going to have to fend off, presumably, other Republicans in a tough primary race, and then have to go on to a general, which is tough as well, coming and dealing with whichever Democrat surfaces from their tough primary race, and knowing, you know, that the Democrats are going to have a lot of resources behind whichever candidate that is, seeing it as a big pickup opportunity. So it could be that people are being cautious right now, lining up endorsements potentially or funding sources, making sure that they really have everything that they need to do this and that they have some sort of strategy. Also, I think it was somewhat of a surprise, Schweikert dropping out. We had heard rumors about it, but I don't know that people were sure he was actually going to not run again for Congress. So it could be that people are, you know, behind on preparing for this. I talked to Schweikert last week, and he has his own thoughts about why people haven't jumped into the race.
When you have the discussion of if Congress is truly just intellectually calcified and not willing to do the things that are necessary, is it worth blowing up your family, blowing up your career, having to shut down your business, sell off certain assets if you have fiduciary relationships with that under the rules?
But all that being said, he said the job does have its perks.
It's still one of the most interesting things someone can ever do in their life. The access to information is stunning. The unwillingness to actually do the actual work is heartbreaking.
Okay, so, you know, Cameron, one of the things Wayne mentioned earlier, and you as well, that this is just one of a handful of competitive districts, not just in Arizona, but nationally, that could determine control of the U.S. House next in 2027. Are Republicans concerned that with Schweikert out of the race, it's weakened their position, it's weakened their ability to hold on to control of the House?
I would expect so, and I know that we've heard some comments to that effect from folks like Senator Jake Hoffman. He leads the Legislative Freedom Caucus, which is known to be sort of the far right wing. He's heavily affiliated with Turning Point, and he made some comments disparaging this decision and saying that Schweikert has made things harder for Republicans, has made it easier for Democrats to take over the seat. And it should be also noted that Hoffman is not supporting Schweikert for governor. He's supporting Andy Biggs, who Schweikert will be facing off against in the GOP gubernatorial primary.
And in your conversation with Schweikert last week, you actually asked him, you know, about this theory that him dropping out of the race might have cost Republicans a seat in Congress.
Weighing the decision of leaving CD1, there's been some complaining from Republicans that this makes things easier for Democrats now that you're not there because you were expected to be the incumbent. Do you think that's true? Do you think this makes things easier for Democrats?
If you don't have a nominee that works like crazy, that is respectful to the voters, yeah, it wouldn't be easier. But I'm also not arrogant enough to think I'm the only one who can win. Look, we've had a problem in Arizona. Look at the top of our ticket for the last four election cycles. You know, our Senate races, our gubernatorial race, we keep losing. Is that partially because so often we've been nominated folks who have not spent enough time of their communication saying, I care about you. I care about how you live. I care about what your future is like. We've had too many candidates talking about how angry they are at something that happened in the past. Look, grievances are very powerful things to get an audience, you know, geared up and get the enthusiasm. You get applause. But it turns out if you need a third of Arizona, what is it? A third of Arizona voters who are independents, and you need them to vote for you. Maybe you need to step up and actually speak with them. That's going to be one of the secrets of who will be my successor, is stand up, You have a very well-educated audience, these voters. They're entrepreneurial. They know when you're making stuff up. Treat them with respect and know your stuff. Memorize your stuff, which is a little different. You know, you get someone who wants to be a politician, my first words to him, go memorize the budget. Because everything's about the money. Whether you think about it, know it or not, everything's about the money. Know what's really going on. And that's my advice.
Schweikert with some advice for his potential Republican successor after serving over 15 years in Congress. And, you know, we've talked a lot about CD1 as a competitive district. There are competitive districts. I mean, Gress was the leading vote getter in the last election in Legislative District 4, but Democrats barely lost the second House seat by just 1%.
Right. And there's also the possibility of another lawmaker from a competitive district like Justin Wilmoth jumping in. He represents Legislative District 2, which is considered split because there's a Democrat representing it and another Republican. So that could be another potential danger area for Republicans if he chooses to enter the congressional race.
And then that could actually end up hurting Schweikert or any other Republican if they happen to defeat Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs in the upcoming gubernatorial election, because, you know, the GOP holds narrow majorities in the state legislature right now, and losing two seats in the House, if they lose some seats elsewhere, you know, they could end up losing control or one or both chambers. And, you know, that's the trickle down effect we're talking about. Now, they lose control of the legislature, and that makes it difficult for a governor to govern. Just look at Hobbs right now. She's a Democratic governor with a Republican legislature. And what is she known for? She's known for her vetoes. She's not known so much for all the legislation she signed. She's known for all the stuff coming from the Republicans that she's axing, or the stuff that she can't even get them to take up that on her list of priorities. So it's really interesting to see how a decision in one race can affect a bunch of other races across the state.
Yeah, call me a cynic, but I'll believe Democrats can flip control of a chamber at the legislature when I see it, but I will leave it at that. We're going to keep following up with Wayne and Cameron to find out more. You'll hear from us as soon as some of those potential candidates maybe decide to officially dip their toe in the water and enter the race in CD1. And we'll have all the coverage of the trickle-down effect that could have into legislative races and what impact that might have on Arizona's next governor.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Prickly Podcast from KJZZ's Politics Desk. Tune in to 91.5 or visit kjzz.org to hear our coverage in CD1 and other contests as the 2026 election season heats up.
And please subscribe to the Prickly Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.